You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProntPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Thursday edition, and I'll repeat my announcement of yesterday. We're on a shortened schedule for the week. We'll have shows Monday through Thursday. Now, next Monday is Memorial Day, so the campus will be closed, so we'll only have three shows next week. But we will not have Friday shows until the fall term, which begins in August. So we'll have four shows, except for holidays. So Friday we will not have a show. We have some breaking news, and that's the fact that it looks like President Trump has called it off. The meeting with Kim Jong-un, I call him Mr. Kim. Now this didn't surprise me, and I'm glad he did it, because he's a negotiator. He knows you got to be able to walk out. And if they're not negotiating in good faith, if they're standing you up at meetings, they're not being responsive, you walk out. And I think after thinking about it, he finally said enough is enough. They had sent an advance team to Singapore, and who didn't show up? The North Koreans didn't show up. Well, if you're going to do that to his people, the response is go home and cancel it. What I have done, if you go to my companion blog for the show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com, that's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. If you go there, under my photograph, you'll have links to the most recent show, 60 to 80. And then below that, you'll have my show prep. Now, I'm going to be covering really only two stories. This is one of them, is the fact that President Trump has now made it clear he is calling it off. He's let the door open, but he's not going to be played the fool. He's not going to be disrespected. And I think he was disrespected. But the question here is really who is pulling the strings. Now, I've made it clear the United States really doesn't want a war, conventional or nuclear, in Korea. Neither does the Koreans, North and South, or Japan. But the United States, and I think rightfully so, places very high priority of stopping nuclear proliferation, not only in the Far East, in Asia, but also in the Middle East. And you have to make those connections between what North Korea is doing and what the Islamic regime are doing. And the Islamic Republic of Iran is, or was, I say is, wants nuclear weapons. They want to dominate the Middle East. So Donald Trump, a couple of weeks ago, pulled out of the agreement. I thought that was President Trump's best decision so far in the foreign policy area. Now, you'll get a lot of debate, but it was a bad agreement. It was so bad that President Obama knew that he couldn't get it through the Senate. The Senate has to confirm treaties, and it requires at least a two-thirds vote, and he didn't have the votes. So he made an agreement, and the problem with agreements, and now former President Obama's learning this, a new president can more or less tear him up, and that's exactly what Donald Trump did. Now, he tried to talk to the Europeans, but they were party to this agreement. Russia, the United Kingdom, France, and the European Union. But it was a bad deal. And President Trump, I think, rightfully characterized it as the worst deal in U.S. history. I agree. Because what you wanted the Iranians would never agree to is the total dismantling and destruction of their nuclear weapon capability as well as their missile capability. And who is assisting and who has been testing those nuclear weapons for them and developing the long-range ballistic missile? It is who? North Korea. So you need to make that linkage. And the ultimate goal of the United States is the total dismantling of nuclear weapons in both North Korea and Iran. That's the goal. We'll try by diplomatic means, including negotiations, but if it's clear that both nations are on the cusp, or it's imminent that they will have operational, proven operational and tested nuclear weapons and delivery systems, namely long-range intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBMs is what they're usually called. With long range, we're talking thousands of miles. The United States and its allies will destroy that capability. So at some point in time, and I don't think it's a distant future, by the way, it's if it's not months, it's a year or two, that these weapon systems will be destroyed. And yes, the United States, Israel, and other countries will assist us in doing that. It's in the interest of the world not to have nuclear weapons, that capability, spread amongst more and more nations. And most nations have don't want to do it. They've renounced the use as well as the development of nuclear weapons. Now, there are many nations that could develop this capability. Japan could, Germany could, but other nations as well. They don't because, first of all, it's expensive, and you got to secure the weapons. It's a long-range commitment, and you probably will never use them. So they've relied on a few nations, but primarily the United States, and on the other side, Russia and Communist China, to have nuclear weapons, but not to use them, even though it's expensive. Just to review, who has nuclear weapons? The United States did first, then you had the Soviet Union, United States, United Kingdom, Soviet Union then, now Russia, Communist China, India, Pakistan, Israel, North Korea has them. Estimates are 15 to 30, but they can't, at least to date, they have not been able to marry. You got to miniaturize the nuclear weapon so it can fit on a ballistic missile. That's the difficult part. And then you got to test that long-range missile to see if its accuracy, and it doesn't explode either on launch or when re-entering the atmosphere. So there are technical challenges. Now, the point I emphasize is, how did a backward totalitarian regime such as North Korea, within a space of about 20 years, have nuclear weapons? Well, there's no secret here. Who helped them? The Communist Chinese. Remember, Communist China is a one-party nation, the Communist Party. It rules China, and they're not our friends, although they are a major importer of Chinese goods into the United States, and we do export with them, but not enough. And they steal our intellectual property. They steal our technologies. I wouldn't do business in Communist China, but many large multinational corporations do, and you got to protect your intellectual property, your patents, your processes, information that the communists steal. So you have to make the connection that North Korea has nuclear weapons today for one reason only: the assistance, both financially, technology-wise, equipment-wise. Remember, these missile launchers, you've seen them, they got about 8 wheels on each side, and they carry a intercontinental ballistic missile. And they have tested them and fired them. It's not clear what the range is. I don't believe they carried nuclear weapons. But it all came from China. Now, did everything come from China? No. They had some assistance from Pakistan and Russia on parts of this whole project. That's a big effort. You're developing two weapon systems, namely nuclear weapons and missiles. And you start off in the nuclear area with very large bombs, but then you quickly miniaturize them, get them smaller and smaller and smaller. And on the missile side, what you do is you increase the range. And over the last 20 years, that's exactly what the North Koreans have done. And they've been assisted by who? The Communist Chinese. Now, the Communist Chinese do not want 25 million North Koreans fleeing into China. Yeah, they do have a fence at the border, and they do control or secure their borders, unlike the United States. They believe that good fences do make good neighbors, but they want North Korea as a buffer, a buffer between them and South Korea, which is a prosperous, successful nation, ally to the United States, has, last time I checked, around 35,000 professional soldiers of the United States stationed there, defending the nation, more or less a tripwire, should North Korea attempt an invasion. I think it would be suicidal. But if they did, a lot of people would die. So it's not in the interest of Communist China, North Korea, South Korea, the United States, or Japan to restart the Korean War. They recently settled that war, at least for now. So what's the sticking point here? I don't think the Communists want the denuclearization of North Korea. So we have, if you will, their bottom line, and the bottom line of the United States is there be no nuclear weapons on the peninsula of Korea, both in the south and the north. So you have an impasse. And because the only nation, as far as I'm concerned, that really has leverage with North Korea is Communist China, you're wasting your time trying to deal with North Korea. I've said what I suspect that the Trump administration has done is told the Communist Chinese, in no uncertain terms, you created this problem, you solve the problem. If you don't solve the problem by some date certain, I think it's 1 January of 2019, then we will increasingly impose either tariffs, import quotas, or a complete embargo on all goods from China trying to enter the United States. Remember, what's the phrase that President Trump used? Maximum pressure. Well, maximum pressure on who? Well, the initial reaction, well, it's on North Korea. Well, what's our pressure on them? Oh, yes, we do have sanctions. I agree that is one way to bring people to the negotiation table, but you got two problems with that. It takes time, and you have nations that will cheat, as did, and I think are, the Chinese. They're shipping oil and natural gas to North Korea. They have pipelines. So even though the United Nations can pass all the sanctions they want, unless you can really totally quarantine North Korea so it can get nothing from the outside world, sanctions aren't going to work. And it's going to simply take too long. And as we wait, what are the Communist Chinese doing as well as the North Koreans doing? They're both communists, by the way. They're perfecting their weapon systems. You delay, 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 but while you're doing, does that mean testing stops? Does that mean research stops? No, it doesn't. People are working on these weapon systems as I speak. Ultimately, this could, it shouldn't, but it could lead to war. Because once it becomes very, very clear that North Korea has an operational nuclear warhead that is integrated onto a long-range intercontinental ballistic missile, the United States will take those missiles out, missiles and bomb factories out. And that will lead to war with North Korea and most likely the Communist Chinese. Now, all the nations don't want that, but that's what needs to happen. Because what the United States fears most and the American people fear most is a terrorist in a possession of a nuclear weapon that's smuggled into the United States and exploded in one or more U.S. cities. So we need to stop nations such as North Korea and Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, from continuing their weapons development efforts. And you can't let them, through negotiations, delay, 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 why they're cheating. And they will cheat. And they will double-cross us. And that's happened with Iran, and that's happened with North Korea. The only thing totalitarian regimes, authoritarian regimes, understand is force. That's the sad fact. They do not respect at all appeasement, weakness. So you must, first and foremost, stand up to them. And you need to put pressure where pressure can be put, and the maximum pressure can be put where? On the Communist Chinese. You see, they have political problems themselves. Remember, there's over a billion Chinese. And over the last 20, 30 years, it's been going on since their founding, but more and more people are leaving the land or leaving farms, rice farming, rice paddies, and they're going into cities. And they've built many cities. A lot of them are empty, though. And what's happened over time, that their strategy, their industrial strategy, is to dominate 10 technology areas. And I'm going to do a show on this sometime in the not-too-distant future. They have the 2025 plan. Now, I'm not in favor of industrial policy. But when you have a centrally controlled, a command-and-control economy, they have what they call industrial policies, where they set out what industries, sectors, technologies that they want to dominate. And they have to look into the future. They're making bets on the future. They want to dominate these areas. Now, in the United States and in many other countries where we have a mixed economy, I was tempted to say a free enterprise market capitalist system. Not really. It's very mixed. Now, President Trump is trying to, first of all, reduce regulation. And that's one of the problems. You get government interference into the economy in an effort to control and direct where investment goes. I'm not a fan of industrial policy at all. It's up to individual companies that are in the best position, knowing the situation as best they can, where to put their very scarce resources into future economic development and advancement in technologies. So we're very much decentralized, and it's up to U.S. corporations, enterprises, to decide where they want to invest. And they do it. The United States government also has some basic research going on, as well as development of technologies. So it's not strictly in the private sector. There's definitely billions of dollars spent on R&D, research and development. But it's not like the communist Chinese situation, where largely it's the government determining what industry sectors they're going to emphasize. Japan is the same way. At one time, Japan was like a giant, a looming giant. Well, Japan has problems. And I think China has problems as well. And one is, you got to look at demographics. The birth rate is definitely below replacement of 2.1. We're slightly under that. But Japan, much of Europe, China, what's happening? Their population is going to get older and older and older. So is ours. But because of low birth rates, low replacement rates, they're definitely way under 2, by the way. I don't have it off the top of my head, but you're talking 1.3, 4, 5, 6, like that in Europe. Russia has even a bigger problem. So the long-run strength of a nation, productivity of a nation, is, first of all, the number of people you have. And it's not strictly a function of numbers. It's how productive they are, what capital they have. That's why, even though there are many nations where the cost of labor is cheap, the productivity is not there. And when you're in a global situation, what's happened in China? The wages have gone up, up, and up. So there are other nations that are even cheaper. But the problem both undeveloped nations have is they're not productive. I guess it's sort of a simple-minded example. If you want full employment, you could have construction projects, highway projects, where you would have people using shovels to move dirt, not tractors, bulldozers. Worst case, you might not even have shovels. You could use spoons, but it would take you a lot of manpower, and it'd take you a longer time. The United States economy is growing roughly at somewhere between 2 and 3%. It could, with the right economic policies, as far as I'm concerned, be growing at 5 or 6%. But that requires the government to stay out of the way. And that's the problem that the communist Chinese have. To think that a government bureaucrat is going to be all wise and know exactly what to do, that's ludicrous. And the reason why socialist economies ultimately fail, no committee, even with the best computers and best minds, can replicate even close the performance of a free enterprise market capitalist system, because of the simple fact that knowledge is dispersed amongst many, many people. It's a fool's errand to think a committee can run an economy. That's why, to the extent nations have opted out for a capitalist system where it's not a command and control system, it's individual entrepreneurs deciding first what the opportunities are and what to invest in. And one of the things to keep in mind, what's the challenge? People's preferences change all the time, as to what they want. I'm not talking needs. People need food and beverages. I understand that. But wants are different. People change what they want. They do it all the time. And because of that, that creates a lot of uncertainty. You see, what the entrepreneur does is try to figure out what he can sell. First of all, what the consumer wants, but more importantly, what he can make the consumer want. That's sort of the dynamic element. And we have a very vibrant, innovative economy. It could be a lot better. What's really dragging this economy is government interference. And then if you consider what the communist Chinese are trying to do, long run, I don't think they're going to be successful unless you overthrow what? The Communist Party, and they don't want that. Remember, both North Korea and communist China are centrally planned economies where control of the people is absolutely essential as far as they are concerned. Oh yes, Japan and China, the emphasis is on collectivism, and that's part of the problem. They don't have an individualist situation, so they tend to go along, and that's why they're stealing our property. You need people to be creative, and to be creative, you need to be free to be creative. So we ultimately have fundamental disagreements between the United States and China. And to get their attention, the United States is going to demand that no longer you're going to steal our intellectual property, our property. I'm talking processes, designs, manufacturing process, how we go about marketing, producing a good, our patents that you have protection on for a period, copyrights, and those are valuable. That's what gives corporations value. Chinese communists think they can exploit that by expropriating that. Even though they're Marxists, they're the biggest exploiters of who? Us, our firms. So I'm not optimistic that the United States, unless you have really tough negotiators, and that remains to be seen, because you have some people, and the administration is divided on this. You have the hardliners that want to, and I don't blame this, make sure if we're going to trade with China, it's fair trade. Not free trade, fair trade. You have others that just want to sell stuff, not protecting the property that actually enables that. And that's what you got to watch out for. Because I don't think the communist Chinese are going to be that, let us say, forthcoming in this regard. Oh, I think we could get into a trade war. It wouldn't be in the interest of the United States to get a trade war. I believe in consumer sovereignty. Namely, the American consumer should decide what to buy, not a government committee in communist China what to buy. Oh, yeah, I'll buy any good. I don't really care where it's made. I look at the price, the quality, the design, a lot of things. So let's get back to what I'm leading up to. In my mind, the toughest negotiation needs to be with the communist Chinese in the trade area. But it also, part of that negotiation, it needs to be made clear that the United States is very serious about stopping nuclear proliferation. And that means North Korea, its missiles and nuclear weapons need to be destroyed. And since you're the only nation, communist China, that can do that, because you created the problem, you either do that or you can forget about trading with us. Oh, yes, it's going to hurt U.S. consumers. But who is it going to hurt most? Communist Chinese. And what they're fearful of, and they should be fearful of, is an uprising, a rebellion amongst the Chinese. Now, right now, that's a rather low probability situation. But if you had tens of millions of Chinese unemployed throughout the nation, it's only a matter of time that that leads to rebellion. Oh, yeah, I think there will be a regime change in both communist China, North Korea, and Iran. Because ultimately, the people will decide. Even though the tyrants have all the weapons, or most of the weapons, at some point, the people will say enough is enough and rebel. Many of them will lose their lives. It will be a civil war again. And I think this time it'll be even worse. And I can see that in North Korea. I can see that in communist China. And I can see it in Iran. Who's going to be first, second, or third? Who knows? And will it happen this year, next year? My crystal ball is no better than yours. But freedom will out. And eventually, once a regime becomes unpopular, and ladies and gentlemen, North Korea and in the Islamic Republic of Iran, the regime is unpopular. And even to a much lesser extent, that's the same situation in communist China. You see, to remain competitive in the world, they have to increase the freedom of the people. And they simply won't be able to do that because they're afraid of losing control. They're afraid of chaos. That's why they don't tolerate political dissent. You can talk all you want, but when you try to organize even a small group, they will clamp down on you hard, and that's in all these regimes. That's the common denominator. They are totalitarian. They are repressive and they're violent. So all three nations, in my mind, at some point will be destabilized. And I'm not saying the United States does it. We might assist, but not really. It has to come from the people there. And that ultimately will lead, hopefully, to more political freedom and economic freedom in all three nations. You see, I would focus in on communist China and make the linkage between access to the United States market, and I would even go further and try to recruit, although it's more difficult, our European so-called allies, that it's in the interest of the world, but the developed nations, to stop nuclear proliferation. And that means in North Korea, and that means in Iran. And since it's the communist Chinese, together with the Russians, and to a lesser extent Pakistan, that are aiding and abetting these, call them rogue regimes, then we're going to forestall access, stop access, to free market capitalist systems. That will be opposed by many special interests in the United States that have already, have many of their plants, have joint ventures in communist China, or rely on sales to communist China, including agriculture. All questions are more or less political economic questions. So I'm not optimistic, never have been. I'm a realist. I'm not an optimist or pessimist. But you need to really take a very hard look. And the administration, to some extent, is doing this. They are doing a study of what the communist Chinese are doing in terms of unfair trade practices. You see, you have to explain this to the American people. And that's the one thing I fault this administration. Now, I'm willing to wait. But you need to give concrete examples of the way the communist Chinese take advantage of us. Because I would say, and this is important, once the American people understand how we have been played by suckers and have been clearly, trying to think of the word, we've had leadership that unfortunately did not protect the long-range interest of the American people and its industry. We gave in to the communist Chinese. We let them get away with this. And Trump, President Trump, doesn't want to do that. He understands how this is played. So I think more and more emphasis will be played on the negotiations between the communist Chinese and the United States, and we'll have more explicit linkages between those negotiations and North Korea. That doesn't mean we can't meet with North Korea, but they are more or less a puppet of the communist Chinese. And it's all up to the communist Chinese. If the communist Chinese wanted North Korea not to have nuclear weapons or missiles, that can be done. It might require a regime change or intervention by them into North Korea, but they don't. They want the status quo, and that's what you need to keep in mind. There's always a default to the status quo. People don't like change, especially significant change. So will there ever be a summit? There might, but I don't think you're going to, short of war or short of major impediments to the Chinese continuing to import into this country. I'm not seeing any sign that, although they make sounds, they vote for the sanctions and all that. You notice the change? You couldn't help but notice the change. First of all, Kim goes to China once, first time out of the country on a plane, comes back. He has a new plane. I think they gave him a plane. And then, I think 2 weeks ago, 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever, he has a second meeting with him. And then suddenly the whole tone changes, and they suddenly are not cooperating. Well, that tells me the communist Chinese have given them the direction. What I'm trying to say, we need to focus on the communist Chinese regime, the Xi, the dictator for life. If Donald Trump is serious and wants to reduce the deficits with communist China, he needs the toughest negotiators possible, and he needs to make the case, first and foremost, to the American people, what's at stake, both in the trade area, our industrial capability, as well as what's at stake in terms of nuclear proliferation. None of that has been set forth. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But that's what leaders have to do. You have to inform the American people what you're doing, why you're doing it. You can't keep them in the dark or say, I got a plan, or I got tough negotiators. Especially when even President Trump gives some mixed signals. The negotiators need to be on the same page. But what I see is the communist Chinese, they will separate or try to separate trade negotiations with negotiations regarding the military capability of North Korea. You really need to combine them. And there's a resistance, even in the United States, to do that. They'd rather keep them separate, because this is difficult, folks. This is not easy. You have two parties that, frankly, there's some middle ground, but very little middle ground. And what gets dangerous about this, there is a ticking time bomb, and that's at some point, North Korea and Iran will have operational nuclear weapons on intercontinental missiles if we don't stop them. So you can't keep kicking the can down the road. And you need to make plans, I'm sure they have plans, to stop this militarily. And I hope it doesn't come to that, but I think at some point it is going to come to that. And you got to prepare the nation for it. But you need to exhaust both diplomatic and negotiation efforts before you do. Because I will be the first to say it's in the interest of communist China, as well as North Korea, to have maximum trade with the United States. You're not going to do that as long as you have North Korea threatening Japan, South Korea. And I will say this, communist China. I don't think the communist Chinese are going to, it's not open-ended. They maybe will have 25 to 50 nuclear weapons, but they're not going to have any more. And that's why I say, ultimately, it's the communist Chinese that are playing the music. And Kim better dance to the music, or they'll find someone else that'll dance to their tune. Now, I want to change gears, and I really thought I wasn't going to get back on Spygate this quickly, but I am, because it's in the news. What I've been wrestling with, and I said Spygate, President Trump has a new brand. It's called Spygate. That's what he's calling, and I briefly went into this last show, what I call the Clinton-Obama Democratic criminal conspiracy. It is by far the greatest political scandal in U.S. history. Why? And it goes right back to President Obama. This conspiracy could not have happened without the approval, the direction, the vision, if you will. Not a good vision, it's a nightmare, of Barack Obama. I think this was very stupid on his part, arrogant on his part, and ultimately will destroy his legacy. What did Obama do? What did he approve? He approved the use of the United States intelligence community, which consists of 16 organizations. I'm not going to list all of them, but you know some of them, they're always in the news, especially nowadays. The Central Intelligence Agency, the National Security Agency, yes, the FBI, because why? The majority of their investigation in cases that they provide the evidence for are criminal. They also, in the United States, unlike other countries, the FBI is in charge of counter-espionage activities, making sure other nations are not spying on the United States and are not conspiring with U.S. citizens to undermine the national security. Now, there are other components of the intelligence community, such as the Defense Intelligence Agency, and all the military services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, they have their own intelligence capabilities, but that's more focused on military needs and intentions, force structures. And you have the spy satellite organization. You have a total of 16 that we know of. I wouldn't be surprised if there are a few more that we don't know of for now. So when you deliberately use and decide to surveil, to spy, using government people, assets, resources, the FBI, the CIA, and the National Security Agency, and the leaders of these organizations, maybe with a few exceptions, were in on it. They were following orders, and that, I think, will be the defense. Well, the president ordered me to do it, and I saluted it. He has the authority to do this. And to some extent, they're right. He does. But that means, who is the master conspirator here? Who is issuing the orders to do this? It's former President Barack Obama. He crossed a very bright line, and in so doing, he committed crimes. You're not supposed to use government, property, assets, people, services to spy on your political opposition. That might be the situation in communist China, Russia, in the past in Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, but that is not the United States of America. He crossed that line. Am I surprised? No. See, I wasn't that impressed with him. I thought he was incompetent. And he was. He was somewhat risk-averse if you look at his history. He tried to avoid political scandal. But after 8 years of being president of the United States, surrounded by people, yes men, that think you're hot stuff, you think you can get away with anything, sir. Well, you didn't. Now, Donald Trump, President Trump, is being coy. He hopes that he's wrong about Spygate. No, sir, you're not wrong about it. You know what went on, or you should. And if you don't, you better watch it. I think he does. You see, the former administration, starting at the very top with President Barack Obama, who are his closest trusted people? Obviously his wife, but she largely took care of the family. It was Valerie Jarrett, number one. Number two, Susan Rice, and her deputy, Ben Rose. Now, there were others in the Department of Justice, in the FBI, and in the NSA. They try to put in place their people. All administrations try to do this. Now, yes, they appoint. There's over 3,000 political appointees. And they use those political appointees to hire people into the civil service working for these departments. They're still there. Every administration, to some degree, does this. Whether it's George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, they're still working there. It's been referred as the deep state. So the bureaucracy has partisans. And they know who they are, and the politicians know who they are. I got the signal, I gotta wrap it up, but I want to cut to the chase. There's not enough attention being placed on who started this. The search today is, when did this investigation start? Well, I'll tell you, it started in April. That's my best educated guess. No later than May, April-May timeframe. The President of the United States spied on the Republican Party candidate for president and his campaign, Donald Trump. He broke the law. He was enabled by his CIA director, his immediate reports, including Susan Rice, and most importantly, Valerie Jarrett. Now, here is what you need to understand. And the light bulb went on today. I was very upset, as are tens of millions of Americans, that Hillary Clinton got off for many, many crimes involving her email server. But I have some good news today. The Obama administration, they didn't really like the Clintons, and they didn't want Hillary Clinton to replace them. But finally, they reconciled to the fact that she was going to be the Democratic Party's candidate. So they involved her in the plot, the conspiracy, by keeping her informed as what the administration was doing. And what were they concerned about? And I said this on the last show. They were concerned that the Russians had broken into her server and had the goods, had the leverage on her, and were afraid that the Russians would expose not only Hillary Clinton, but Barack Obama. So he made sure that the intelligence agencies were spying on the Trump campaign. And so they could be alerted if the Russians gave them anything. They didn't, because they knew they thought, as did the Democratic Party, that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president. So they'll wait till she's president to blackmail her. And they can blackmail Barack Obama, because he almost daily was in communications when she was Secretary of State with her using that server. Oh, yeah, he lied about when he knew it. He lied about how many times he emailed. It was going on all the time. He was as guilty as hell, and as president had responsibility of shutting it down and didn't do it. And he made sure that the fix was in, and it was in making sure she got under that investigation. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a police state. Or was, when you use the intelligence community against the American people in the manner it was done for political reasons, all of those are felonies, serious felonies. And there are many people, dozens, that should be going to jail. And President Trump better clean this mess up. They can't get away with it. Every individual that was involved in this conspiracy needs to go to prison. From the very top to the lowest. Who crossed the line? Not President Trump. Who crossed the line was Barack Obama, many in his administration, and yes, Hillary Clinton. Are we going to learn a lot more details? You better believe it. And they'll be coming out in the coming months. I have to wrap it up. Thank you for listening. And what I recommend you do, just to get a sense of what was going on, read Ed Klein's book, All Out War, The Plot to Destroy Trump. He's written other books, but read that one first, and then tell me Barack Obama wasn't plotting and using the intelligence community to spy on Donald Trump. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. With a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com. and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.